was based on a blast of RDX, one of the loudest explosives available, large enough to break a major column outright with a single blast. They assumed no efforts at noise abatement, complete transmission of the sound to the outside air, no absorption or blockage of the sound along the path. And who knows if they assumed the use of an efficient cutter charge or if they simply figured the effect of a bomb planted beside a column. They don't say. Their sole reason for doing this calculation was to create a pretext to sidestep any actual investigation of explosives. Why would NIST or anyone else choose to exclude from its investigation any evidence of any explosions related to the destruction of the building?
At the same time, it should be noted that NIST's report on Building 7 was never published by a peer-reviewed publication. This means their analysis of the collapse cannot be validated from a scientific point of view. Even though this was an unprecedented event in history, we are being asked by NIST to take their word for the soundness of their conclusions.
It's based on sound science, and it is consistent with all the observations we have.
But it has never happened before, right?
But it's the physics is consistent, it's sound, it's been analyzed, and we have the results. And we are very comfortable with our findings.
They might have been comfortable, but the scientific community of architects and engineers was not.
Science is never secret when it's done right. Science isn't science unless it's published, unless it's openly published and made available for criticism.
Architects and Engineers has asked NIST to at least verify the computer model on which they've based their theory of the collapse. But also in this case, NIST has refused to make their data public.
Structural engineers rail against NIST because they refuse to show the visualization. It's a black box. You cannot download any of this data.
This means that also for the accuracy of their computer model, we have to take NIST's word for it.
Here's our structural model showing the building collapsing, which matches quite well with the video of the event.
This is the video of the event. On the right is one of the two animations released by NIST on the collapse of Building 7.
When you observe the footage of how the building failed, and when you look at the animation of the failure, and compare that to what you actually observe in reality, I think they disproved their own theories. It is impossible for it to fail the way they said.
The second animation released by NIST is even more inconsistent with the real event. While the animation shows a pronounced inward bending of the top of the structure, the video footage shows the entire top section of the building maintaining its shape all the way through the visible part of the collapse. This can be verified by different angles. If this is what NIST calls matching quite well, one can imagine what the reliability of their entire report can be.
9/11 was an inside job to get us to go to war, just like Vietnam, by blowing something up to get us all in arms. I wanna wish you a Merry Christmas. Oh! Do you remember the Maine from the Spanish War? Or the U.S. Maddox from Vietnam? They were attacked to get us all in arms. Now I wanna wish you a Merry Christmas. Children!
9/11 was an inside job to get us to go to war.
I wanna wish you a Merry Christmas. You remember Building 7? How did it go down? A plane never touched it, but it fell to the ground. If that could happen, what's not to discover? They did pull the other buildings. Everybody,
9/11 was an inside job. Giving us all in arms, just like Vietnam, by blowing something up to get us all in arms. I wanna wish you a Merry Christmas.
In order to justify the first and only collapse in the history of a steel skyscraper due to fire, the debunkers have maintained that Building 7 was weaker than the average steel structure because it had been built over an existing electrical substation.
The building was extremely unconventional. It had this giant Con Ed substation with enormous trusses carrying extraordinarily high loads, very vulnerable to fire and other kinds of damage.
But NIST itself has refuted this possibility. From the final report, we read, the transfer elements such as trusses, girders, and cantilever overhangs that were used to support the office building over the Con Edison substation did not play a significant role in the collapse of World Trade Center 7. In fact, it was the opposite. After it was completed, Larry Silverstein had the building reinforced beyond its requirements in order to accommodate the needs of its main tenant, Solomon Brothers. From this 1989 New York Times article, we read, Solomon Brothers intends to spend nearly 2 years and more than $200 million cutting out floors, adding elevators, reinforcing steel girders, upgrading power supplies, and making other improvements in its million square feet of space. We built in enough redundancy to allow entire portions of floors to be removed without affecting the building's structural integrity, said Larry Silverstein, president of the company. More than 375 tons of steel, requiring 12 miles of welding, will be installed to reinforce floors for Solomon's extra equipment. If there was one skyscraper in the world that should have never collapsed due to fire, it was Building 7.
In other news this week, the finding that allowed the National Institute of Standards and Technology to withhold data from its World Trade Center 7 collapse simulation has finally been released via whistleblowing site Cryptome.org. The finding was made on July 9, 2009, and reads in part, quote, "The disclosure of the information in connection with NIST's investigation of the technical causes of the collapse of the World Trade Center Towers and World Trade Center Building 7 on September 11, 2001, might jeopardize public safety. Therefore, NIST shall not release the information," end quote. Although the finding was made last year, the actual finding itself was not available to those who had requested the information, leading many to suspect that it would contain details of exactly how or why the data from NIST's WTC-7 collapse simulation would jeopardize public safety, but no such explanation is to be found. Analysts note the finding is especially odd given that NIST itself has claimed that the collapse of WTC-7 was an extraordinary event, unprecedented in history, and that they arrived at that conclusion using the computer model whose input and result data they have now classified in the name of public safety.
What we found was that uncontrolled building fires, similar to those we have seen in other tall buildings, caused an extraordinary event. The collapse of World Trade Center 7 was primarily due to fires. This is the first time that we're aware of that a building over 15 stories tall has collapsed primarily due to fire. We reached this conclusion by reconstructing the entire building, beam by beam, column by column, connection by connection, into a computer model, a virtual WTC-7 building.
Many are wondering whether NIST's reluctance to release their data is due to the questionable nature of the science underlying a simulation that many have pointed out is little more than a visual recreation of the initiation of a building collapse, which in itself explains nothing and does not even show the entire progressive collapse of the 47-story building.
Zie je vanaf boven gaan? Nee, je gaat vanaf onder.
Die gaat vanaf onder, ja.
Toch?
Ja.
Ze hebben gewoon kolommen weggeblazen. Er is nagesprongen.
Dit valt anders als het World Trade Center.
Vind je niet dan?
Ja, je ziet het. De onderste verdiepingen gaan eerst.
Ja, en de rest zakt er gewoon in. Dus dit is controlled demolition.
Zeker weten?
Zeker weten. Er is nagesprongen. Dit is in opdracht gebeurd. Dat heeft een team gedaan van experts.
Maar dit is ook op 11 september gebeurd.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org for Wednesday, October 21st, 2015. One Palestinian youth was killed by Israeli troops' gunfire near Jerusalem on Wednesday, while an elderly man died during ongoing clashes in the southern West Bank city of Hebron. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. On Wednesday afternoon, Mu'taz Atallah Qasim, 22, was shot dead by Israeli soldiers outside the illegal Israeli settlement of Adam near the town of Jaba', north of occupied Jerusalem. He is from Izariya town near Jerusalem. Qasem was shot after allegedly he tried to stab two Israeli soldiers on the Jaba roundabout just outside the illegal settlement. According to witnesses, the man was shot with multiple live rounds to the head and the abdomen, while another youth standing near the incident area was arrested by Israeli soldiers and taken to unknown location. The circumstances of Qasem's death remains unknown. Israeli troops closed down the road, which leads to the nearby city of Ramallah and the northern part of the West Bank, which led to severe traffic. Earlier on Wednesday midday, Hazem Al-Azza, 54, from the Tel Romeda neighborhood in Hebron Old City, died of severe effects of tear gas inhalation after dozens of soldiers invaded a Zawiya area in the city and clashed with local youth, medical sources at the Hebron Governmental Hospital reported. Medics rushed to the scene and tried to stabilize his condition before moving him to hospital, where he died of the severe effects of tear gas inhalation. Several Palestinians were also injured after being shot with live rounds and rubber-coated steel bullets, while dozens suffered the effects of tear gas inhalation in Bab al-Zawiya area and Tariq bin Zayed Street. In addition, a Palestinian youth was shot with a live round in the chest during clashes with Israeli soldiers invading the Dawara area in Sa'ir town north of Hebron. On Tuesday at night, soldiers shot and killed two children, aged 15 and 17 years old, in Hebron Old City, allegedly after they tried to attack soldiers. The army claimed that one soldier was lightly wounded. Since October 1st, 53 Palestinians have been killed and more than 2,000 others were injured by Israeli troops, according to Palestinian medical sources. A report by the Palestinian Ministry of Health showed that since the start of October, 5,500 residents were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation fired by Israeli troops targeting Palestinian protesters. More clashes on Wednesday were reported in Ramallah City, Central West Bank, Bethlehem in the south, and Nablus in the north. In Bethlehem, two youth were shot with live rounds. In Ramallah, 17 people were injured by Israeli troops' live gunfire, rubber-coated steel bullets, and tear gas. Moreover, at least 28 Palestinians were kidnapped during army invasions and home searches on Wednesday at dawn, targeting a number of West Bank communities. 21 of those kidnapped were taken from Hebron City. The rest were kidnapped during army attacks on homes in the cities of Nablus, Jenin, and Bethlehem. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Wednesday, October 21st, 2015, news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
Santa Cruz.
Radio.
Music should be free, and so should be, so should radio. This is Ian from Fugazi.
This is Jello Biafra.
Radioactive.
This is Boots Riley from the Coup.
Hey, this is Emily from the Indigo Girls.
Hello there, this is Tom Morello.
Peace, be still. This is Azeem checking in from Oakland, California.
This is Jim Page.
Yo, what the deal? This is Immortal Technique.
This is so-and-so from 15.
This is Michelle Shuck.
This is Mike Park.
This is Thomas from Strike a New Air.
And whenever I'm running from the police, I gotta find out where to go. I listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
101
Freak Radio.
Freak Radio.
On your FM dial has been successfully flying the skull and crossbones for the past 10 years.
Amen! FM Hallelujah!
Freak Radio Santa Cruz is a vital part of this country's independent media.
Santa Cruz 101 FM. Live stream online at www.freakradio.org.
Music should be free. So should radio.
The special interviews on the shelter crisis, the upcoming city council meeting on December 8th, hopefully around the sleeping ban, and protests galore in Santa Barbara, Santa Cruz, and around the globe.
Hula hoop, Castro, Italy.
December 6, 1998. We're here in Noah's Bagelry about, 10:30 or so? We're talking to
Frank Ross.
And Frank, you're a prisoner of California.
Yes, sir.
In fact, you're a prisoner of Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz. Hey,
why is that?
Because I got another ticket yesterday.
Now, what were you doing? Perhaps beating up a woman with her child?
I was standing there, wasn't making a word, just standing there holding newspapers.
You were breaking windows of cars, right?
No, I wasn't. In fact, I've...
You were throwing petrol on homeless people and burning them up.
I might get away with that.
Were you again at Plymouth on Ocean Street?
No, not on Ocean. It's a block, about a half, a quarter of a block away. It's Plymouth south of Grant. And I was staying in the same spot I was last Sunday that they gave me the ticket. And this one was a female California Highway Patrol on a motorcycle pulled up. My girlfriend was sitting there with her dog watching me sell papers. And what happened is she pulled up and I go, well, the first thing that came out of my mouth was, oh, no, not again. And she says, well, what do you mean? I says, well, I just got one last week. And she says, well, not like this one, you're not. And, like, she knew what was going on or something, so she gave me a ticket. She ran my license again from Florida, criticized why I'm here, because Florida's supposed to be warmer. And I says, no, it's not. I've been there. Have you? She goes, no. And I go, well, it's colder in Florida than it is here. And then she goes, is this your current address? And I says, no, I'm residentially challenged. And she says, cut the crap. You're not the political crap. Or, well, you know, she said, to quote her, she says, cut the political correctness crap. You're homeless. And I just looked at her, didn't say anything. I knew I better just keep my mouth shut. Because she asked me what I had done with my cigarette butt, and I said, I set it over here next to my bag. And she looked, and there it was, because I don't litter neither. I don't even litter cigarette butts. And because there's enough litter over there, I've cleaned up some of it where I was standing, because I don't want it to be,
frequent tactic used by police officers is to tell you to put out your cigarette, then give you a littering ticket when you do it on the ground.
Right, yeah. Well, that's what I figured she was going to do, but I set it right next to my bag. So, but she did simply gave me the ticket. And that's what she proceeded to give me the ticket.
Now we've moved to a little incident happened here at Noah's Bagelry. To interrupt this, Frank, your brief story, we're talking to Frank Ross. But Becky Johnson, yeah, you're having a bagel here at Noah's Bagelry. What just happened?
Well, one of the staff members came over and rather rudely insisted that the windows near the front of the street need to be open because she's hot and she's cooking back by hot ovens way in the back of the store. And I pointed out that it's 65 degrees out and we were quite cold and closed the windows for our own comfort. And I said, oh, so it's for the convenience of staff rather than the customers, huh? She was very rude.
And I guess there was a suggestion that because we are a somewhat hirsute, scruffy group.
Because we had a group of somewhat scruffy looking customers here that she felt that she could treat us that way with impunity.
I had a shower yesterday.
You showered yesterday and you were still given a ticket by this female California Highway Patrol officer. I have to hear more about this. Hang on. So continuing, Frank, I see you have this ticket here with you. It's a citation for November 5th, 3:15 in the afternoon, Frank C. Ross. You've given your address of Zephyrhills, Florida.
Zephyr Hills.
That's
what my license says.
Zephyr Hills. And the ticket is for 5.43.020B, Santa Cruz Municipal Code, soliciting within 10 feet of an intersection, selling newspapers.
And then I tried to write under duress right here, and she grabbed the book from me, and she says, if you don't want to go to jail, I suggest you sign your name. And I told her I was going to sign my name, but I wanted to let everybody know that I was being, this is under duress, that I'm signing it.
The proper practice to use with that is you should ask the officer, if I decline to sign this ticket, will you take me to a magistrate, or will you take me to jail? If she then, or he then says, I will take you to jail, then you you can actually write under duress, or you can just sign the ticket, and the next day, as I was suggesting, go into the court and say, I want my signature rescinded because it was done under duress. I wasn't going to be given the opportunity to go to a magistrate.
She was looking for things to find to take me to jail. So I just tucked my tail in, put my panties on, and kissed her butt, man, like she wanted me to do.
You know what we can do? We can go down and slap her butt with a complaint to the CHP, if you'd like.
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to. In fact, I was really actually going to do all this. I was going to do it with you or without you. I'm going to try to sue him for harassment or something.
Remember, this may go absolutely nowhere.
But it doesn't matter.
And it also may result in the CHP taking an increased interest in your activities.
Right.
You may get more tickets.
Right. Well, so, then that would be proof of harassment there.
If you've ever found an attorney with the interest in taking the case.
Right.
So don't mislead yourself as to where this may lead.
The only thing they can do to me is put me in jail for 30 days, fine me $1,000 fine for each offense. But hey, I get a free shower, free meals. Hey, I mean, it's better than being homeless on the streets.
Okay. I mean, I appreciate that attitude. You're a vulnerable person as a homeless person. Be aware of that.
I mean, they can, you know. I've done time before anyways. You know, I mean, I could do that day, these days, staying on my nose, smile at them every day. You know, they're also doing me as a favor, actually, you know. They got to clothe me. They can take care of my tooth. They can take care of my broken back. They can take care of my my artery that's hardening because my arm goes numb on me all the time. Like, you know, they tell you you're supposed to have, but I don't like to say the word. But they take care of me, man.
Thank you, Frank. Well, that's a possibility. We'll see what happens when we go into the CHP.
Sorry, what were you saying? The reason why I'm selling newspapers, my girlfriend's over here across the street. She's panhandling right now because she's been abused. And we both were both brought up abused. And we're just trying to make money to get bikes so we can get the hell out of this godforsaken state. It's the only reason why we're doing this. I mean, I could go and easily go steal me a bike. I've been in prison for stealing. I can go break into a house. I can rob somebody, bop them in the head. I've done that, been there. You know, that. I mean, and I never got caught. I mean, I could do that. But no, I wanted to do things legitimate. So I got me a nice girl. I got a future somewhere ahead of me. It ain't in this for state. But right now I'm a prisoner for 30 days, I guess, at least. And I just want to make money so I can get the hell out of here the legal, most easy way that I can.
Thank you. Well, I don't know what to say, Frank. It's very well put. That's all I can say there. So this isn't the first time you sold papers.
Oh, correct. I sold them in Arizona, Texas, and Florida. And I never had, never, except that time in Arizona where we all got that officer off the job for harassing us.
Tell us about that.
That was 1994, 95 in Mason, Phoenix, Arizona. And this Officer Cottrell was harassing all the homeless people selling newspapers. He would give us our tickets every day. And finally, some lawyer pulls up that we used to sell paper to, took our case, and we all filed our names on this class action lawsuit. And instead of us suing him, he took early medical retirement leave, and then we couldn't sue him because he was no longer a police officer anymore. So, but we got rid of him, though. You know, I mean, we had no other hassles. I mean, we made money. We all got our bikes. We traveled. And, you know, we didn't do any, we didn't spend our money on alcohol or drugs. But we was, you know, bought tobacco and stuff like that. But, you know,
deadly is drug.
You know, the dead, right. But it's legal, at least. I'm doing everything legal according to my books. You know, I mean, I can't carry a law library around with me to know if I'm 10 feet or not. I don't have a ruler if I'm 10 feet or not. You know, at least give me a warning. You know, let me know before you ticket me. And I can bow my head and go. I mean, I'll go to the law library myself and look it up like I did about my camping. You know, I've been in that library and I looked up about camping because I kept getting harassed where I was camping at here in Santa Cruz.
How long ago was this?
About 2 weeks ago. And now I know the laws. I got it written right on my tent. Exemption number and everything.
Tell us about that.
Well, and it tells you where you can camp, where you can't camp, how long, and things like that. So one of the sections has an exemption. And I'm camping in Pogonip, up by Pogonip Open Space Preserve. And it does mention this open space as an exemption.
Have you actually been, you know, the police have seen your ticket and tent? And
yeah, there's been rangers come by. They even complimented us on how nice and clean our camp was.
Because that's interesting. I've never heard of that. You should perhaps let us know what that exemption is. I know there is an exemption outside the city. A coconut is inside the city limits. So that's an interesting exception to the camping ban, which I've never heard of. Perhaps you could get that to us. What's that? Outside the city, it's legal to camp or sleep almost anywhere except on private property with against the permission of the owner. There are four no-camping zones that are very small. They're like, you know, three or four blocks, five or six blocks. Each one is Pasatiempo, another is Tanner Heights, but none of them are really to the north or south. They're all kind of to the east. So mostly in the county.
What? I'm just past the sign on the side of the road.
It is legal for you to be there, but of course the deputies misinform people about this regularly. They'll harass you anyway. That's the problem.
So I have it written on my tent. I have it one of the papers, and I got it written on there with magic marker, the code for camping and the exemption number and everything. And I haven't noticed hassleless. We haven't got no red ticket. Haven't moved our stuff.
How long have you been there?
About 3 weeks.
Wow.
I do mess with all the druggies because I have to walk down there and go past where all the prostitutes and drug people hang out. Right. And I go way past them, and I'm way at the northern, almost to the borderline of, but it's still within the city limits of their rules.
You know, anybody else is used to your system?
No. In fact, I try not to tell anybody because then, you know, then you're going to get riffraff and you're going to get, you know, and I got me a woman out there and we don't need any problems. You know, there are people who know we're there. A lot of locals walk by and they don't, you know, we say hello to them. We keep our place clean. I take my garbage out daily. There's, you know, we have no problems. I have a stove out there, a lantern that I light every night, and everybody, you can't help but see it. Locals see me, like I said, every day. And I will say hello to them. I talk to them. And, you know, a lot of them say, well, I've lived here all my life, and it's a beautiful place, isn't it? I says, yes, sir. And, you know, I like our camp. And he says, yeah, it's really nice. And he says, well, we're not going to be here long, but, you know, we just have no other place to go for right now.
Just don't sell newspapers, that's all.
Well, not in a forest.
Maybe heroin or cocaine would be a better and more profitable.
I've made a lot of money doing that. I never got busted in my life doing that. I got three felonies on my record, as it stands for now, but those are all for robberies, two robberies and burglaries, you know. But everything else I've done, I've never got caught for it. And I've made a lot more money than I am now, and I didn't have no police harassing me when I was selling drugs neither. But I haven't done drugs in 10 years, so, and I don't plan on going back to doing any drugs.
Maybe we could line up a couple of robberies for you.
Yeah, well, just because I sell drugs don't mean I gotta do them neither.
Thank you.
I need something about the policeman's kids.
The police don't need to sell them. They confiscate them.
Yeah, they have their own supply.
Yeah. I think you have some additions to add to this ticket you got yesterday from the California Highway Patrol.
Right, because before there was three California Highway Patrol officers that drove by me in their vehicles. And every time any officer goes by me, I always give them the peace sign. And not one of them even looked at him, and he didn't care two hoots about me being there. But then when that female officer came up, I think she didn't like my T-shirt, because I got a T-shirt on that says I'm not a criminal, and I had my long hair. I just took a shower and everything, so I was letting my hair dry and all that. And then my girlfriend's black, and I think she just had
Did she know that you have any words to say to your girlfriend or your dog?
She told her she could sit there all she wanted, stay there. And she goes, no, I'm with him. Because she wanted me to leave. Because all I was doing was standing there holding papers. She told me I had to leave. She leaned up against her motorcycle and waited for me to leave. And then she told my girlfriend, I can't mention her name because her husband, ex-husband, is a really bad beater. And she told her that she could stay there, but I had to leave.
Thanks, Frank. So Frank, you said you have a problem with the homeless, the free meal. What is that?
Oh, because HRCS.
Yeah.
It's because the plastic spoons. Everybody, they got dirty hands. They dish right into it. They serve the food over the food. You're supposed to serve your food outside of the pot that it's being served into. People, it's just nasty. Every time I go there, I get sick. So I have not eaten there.
You actually gotten sick when you went there?
Yes, sir. Definitely got sick because of that place.
How many times?
Both times I went there to eat. So ever since I've stopped eating there, and I eat at my own camp now, I have My cold's going away. I don't feel sick. I don't puke. My stomach's okay. And everything.
You associate that with the food at the Homeless Community Resource Center?
Yes, sir. Even our dog food has more meteor chunks than that food they had there last night, even. It looked like dog food.
You were there? You didn't eat there last night? Or you?
No, I went there to take a shower yesterday, and I went to go steal some toilet paper out of there. That's about it. And I didn't have to notice what they were feeding yesterday. It was that rice and whatever that junk was. And I mean, I wouldn't even give it to my dog. Our dog eats better than that out of a can.
And with us on the phone on Free Radio Santa Cruz, we have that man about the camping ban or the sleeping ban.
Thank you. Thank you for that distinction.
That's David Silva. Hi, David.
Hi, Robert. How are you?
Good. What's cooking? You have a kind of a report from the downtown business man, Peter Eberle.
Oh, you found me out, Robert.
Indeed. I've been checking you out.
Yeah, well, I did meet with the director of the Downtown Association today. You know, it's to me very apparent that something is going to be done in terms of the sleeping ban and amending the camping ban and activities around camping ban. So the sleeping ban's involved. I wanted to, reach out business community and find out what their concerns are. If we're going to make this work, we do have to make it work together. So I went there to, basically, I ended up just rattling on for an hour, mostly giving them course 101A on the sleeping ban. And he wasn't all that forthwith himself, but I got a sense of what the concerns of the business people downtown are.
Tell us who Peter Eberle is.
He's the director of the Downtown Association.
And I know we heard from Catherine Byers yesterday that there were six different organizations. This is what she said. I'm not quite sure what she was referring to. That business organization she wanted to kind of check things out with before making any changes in the sleeping or camping ban. Now, then she later apparently changed that position later in the day, perhaps due to all the good phoning from all you radio people out there in radio land who want to end the sleeping ban. And by the way, should also pick up your phones right now and dial the city council at
429-3550. Hit the pound key.
You got it. Well, what did you learn from Peter? And you sound pretty upbeat here, David.
Well, I sound upbeat because I really got a sense that the man is resigned that the sleeping ban is going to go away. And he has concerns on how we can do this as a community. He also come to understood that, you know, this is, it has a long history in Santa Cruz. It has a history of that, you know, could really be pointed to some bad behavior on some homeless people. But we absolutely have to acknowledge that there's been bad behavior on the part of the police department, and that the sleeping ban has been the excuse for a lot of that bad behavior. So we kind of came to that mutual respect in each other's positions.
Now, can you clarify briefly for listeners who may not know the difference between the sleeping and the camping bans?
Well, within the camping ordinance, the very opening of the camping ordinance is a definition of camping. Section 1A and B. Section A says sleeping between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. And then it says in other words, in any condition, sleeping outside, out of doors. Sleeping out of doors is illegal because it's considered camping.
Even in a vehicle?
Even on public or private property, under a vehicle, with or without blankets or bedding or camping, you know, it's sleeping out of doors is illegal.
So sleeping itself is illegal?
Sleeping itself is illegal. And the same with Section B, covering up, you know, is considered camping. Even putting a blanket over your child's shoulders is considered camping. So I got it really clear with him, and he understands that, you know, there is a human rights violation involved. And I got the sense that most of the businesses also do, but he did warn us that there's a hardcore of reactionary businessmen that are really going to fight this, and we can expect them to show up in pretty strong mass Tuesday at City Hall. And also that what they're doing is what I call fear-mongering by getting the other businesses to be afraid of people sleeping in front of the doorways, sleeping in the street, and also the magnet theory. So I think I pretty much convinced them that the magnet theory is bogus.
Now, what is the magnet theory?
Magnet theory is that, you know, if any one city anywhere in this fragile system of homeless population throughout the country or in the state of California, if any one city lifts its its homeless laws, any of its anti-homeless laws, or if any one of the cities provides too much social service, then all the homeless will run to that community. Well, that's bogus. It's been proven scientifically over and over again that that's not true. People do not move for those reasons. So I got him to really understand that, you know, that is a pretty much dismissed argument, even though it may be the argument that it may be the position of fear that a lot of shopkeepers have. You know, we can assure them with lots of previous research, lots of evidence. Congressman Sam Farr says that it's baloney. We can assure them that that's not the case.
But Mayor,
there may be a small percentage, say, of people that are no longer trespassing after the sleeping ban, and may be a little bit more visible, but it will not be a large visibility. They do not have to be afraid. This law is the police department's pet law. That's where the problem is.
Be more specific. Can you continue on?
Yeah, it's a pet law because it's a broad law that they can use indiscriminately, that they can use to harass people. It's a law that, you know, since it's outlawed, something that no person without a house can help but do, and that's sleep. It means that they can pick and choose who they want to criminalize. Our Constitution is very clear that that's not the role of the police officer, that's not the role of law enforcement in this country, and it's very dangerous whether you're dealing with gypsies or whether you're dealing with the rainbow people, the new gypsies, that if you begin these kind of programs that you end up affecting a wider population for one thing, and the other thing is that basically once you start eroding the rights of any population that you don't like, you're going to erode the rights of all of us. And that's a basic argument in this country. It's one of our founding principles, and I think he got pretty clear that, you know, this, that we are about human rights, those of us that are involved in repealing the sleeping ban, and that we are quite willing to work, and we know that between now and February, when we expunge the sleeping ban, that we're going to have to sit down with these business people and assure them much the same way that the drumming people got together and proved that self-regulation can work. They're going to have to meet real homeless people, because I had to give them about five case studies, so to speak, of the variety of homeless types situations, you know, and the things that homeless people have to do. You know, they have to have their sleeping equipment stored in one friend's house, and they're cooking stuff in one friend's house, and have to go somewhere else to use the kitchen, somewhere else to use the refrigerator. Then they have to walk clear across town because they're saving money, and end up missing a bus to go to a shelter that they may or may not have been qualified for. There's a lot of reality that these people have to understand. So we do have to come together as a community, and I really have high hopes that there's going to be some business people out there that have creative imagination, that remember the charm that Santa Cruz was before the earthquake and want to recapture that. So I think it's exciting. It's really challenging, and we need to do the work.
Thank you, David. Anything you want to conclude with?
Everybody show up Tuesday, whenever this item is going to be on the agenda.
Are you bringing your sleeping bag and your blanket there, David?
I'm going to have my blanket over my shoulder. Yeah, I think we need to continue to be symbolic and to the point, and people need to understand the cruelty of this law as we do away with it, as we phase it out. But we need to do it as a community. And I'm glad that the business community is coming on board, and we hope we can get the police community to come on board.
Thank you, David.
Sure thing.
And that was David Silva of the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban, reached before he dashes off to one of his innumerable meetings. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host with Civil Rights for the Poor, also known as Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Bathrobes Pierre, and you can see my broadside if you're nice to me. To call us, you can reach 427, you can give a call to 427-3772. That's our studio line. We have an open line. We only have one line, so if you get a busy signal, just keep trying. You'll get through eventually. We are very deferential to callers in that we really appreciate your input. We see here at Free Radio our purpose, at least I see the purpose of my show, as providing a real forum in the community around important civil rights issues that are elsewhere given short shrift or ignored. To wit, the Metro, the Sentinel, the Good Times, the City Council. There's a lot of hoopla and self-congratulations and high hopes about the new City Council. David Silva, as you just heard, seems to be very positive, very upbeat. However, I've talked to other people who, though initially rather upbeat, are now not so upbeat. Particularly around this issue of the sleeping ban, because the minimum that most of us agreed was necessary for this council to take action before it recesses for the winter, and that'll be on Tuesday. Its last scheduled council meeting is Tuesday, December 8th.
And it should have, on November 24th, put the sleeping ban on the agenda. Actually, the old council with Catherine Byers and Celia Scott should have put it on the agenda on the 17th. But the 24th, the new council could have put it on. It could have been put on the agenda by Byers, and the new council could then have begun the discussion process that would have allowed people to sleep this winter without fear of harassment, tickets, jails, fines, vehicle confiscations, and so forth. It is not yet as I am. It's not yet clear to me that that issue is on the agenda at all. This Tuesday, there is something going to be on the agenda. As I mentioned earlier, I spoke to Mayor Byers yesterday. She told me that first there wasn't going to be anything. Then later in the day, she said there was going to be something. And we're about to play, by the way, so stay tuned, a segment of a KUSP radio show. No, KZSC, sorry. KZSC radio show last night, that's the university station, on which council members Crone and Sugar, boy, I need some coffee or something, or maybe less coffee, were talking about the sleeping ban last night on the air and about what they plan to put on the agenda. And we did try to get some input into that process this morning, some of us from the committee to repeal the sleeping ban. And I'm hoping to get a call from Becky Johnson, who is both my producer and an expert in her own right on shelter situations, having been a board member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless until she was kicked off by Karen Gillette and the Homeless Community Resource Center gang for apparently being a little too industrious in her support of the rights of homeless people. You don't want to go too far with these things or it might, you know, annoy the fundraisers. We have an incoming call on the air.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Good evening, Bathroom Spear.
Good evening.
This is Shaw's Mr. Fidget.
Yes.
Wanted to give you a call and give you my little update as I run around and share it with the community through your Marf Avenue of free radio. My case management conference for my whole mess with the Canfield is coming up Tuesday at 8 o'clock there at the courthouse, and they're going to, for the first time, have each side of the lawyer sit down, and I've been actively pursuing, making these people accountable for their actions in regard to me, and hopefully...
Hang on a second, Shaza. Let's tell the audience, we were actually talking about the sleeping ban when you called in, and I know you have a strong interest in that issue as well.
Indeed, I was about to go there.
About to go to the sleeping ban.
Indeed, I was.
Why don't you first talk about the ban, if I can kind of direct you.
And then we
will return to your Tuesday 8 a.m. Management conference around the assault you suffered at the beach boardwalk about a year ago.
You bet. Yeah, I was going to say, I spoke to the new mayor-elect. It's Catherine, right?
Catherine Byers.
Catherine Byers a couple days ago, and I expressed to her that I felt that the sleeping ban was definitely a bad thing for people, and, suggested that it go on the agenda, and she told me that it wouldn't be going on the agenda, and, she was going away there, and I was showing her details of my case, actually, and I just filed my complaint with the CPRB yesterday about this whole mess,
mm-hmm.
But, and as she was going away, she did reassure me, as I said, well, at the very least, you should let the police or instruct them to make it a low priority, and she did say that they intended to do that, or gave me a nod, and that was about it, though.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're not quite pleased with that.
That's the update on the sleeping ban.
Yeah, that was yesterday. That's what she told me.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, yeah, I talked to her yesterday, too, and then she called in and said she was going to do, as you say, something similar, making it the lowest priority, and Keith Sugar reaffirmed that when we talked to him last night on KZSC, and we're going to play that taped segment shortly. But let's briefly talk about your case at 8 a.m. on Tuesday morning. I guess that'll be the December 8th. You go to your case in the morning, then you bring your sleeping bag and your blanket in the evening for the city council.
A full day.
What court is it in?
It's not actually the case. This is the case management conference where the two lawyers sit down the sides sit down and talk about what they're going
to
do.
Is it open to the public?
I'm really not sure if it's open to the public. I'll find out and let you know. What I do know is that, I guess lawyers always have a way of looking at either side of it. But considering the fact that they charged me and it took 6 months for those charges to go to the DA, and then in between that time, my whole situation broke out in the national media of sorts, and I wasn't able to have an accountable thing. I think that they're going to have a hard time defending it because of the public property.
Yeah, let me interrupt briefly to explain that you are an individual who has devised a kind of a radically new kind of worry toy, the fidget, which many people may be aware of. It's a sort of a mechanical device made up of bicycle parts,
mm-hmm.
which you can use to get true peace of mind without 20 years of Zen.
Well, or at the very least, because if somebody tries one and doesn't get true peace of mind, I'd hate to have false advertising. But I would say that it would give them something to occupy their mind when other circumstances were out of their control.
Indeed.
And that's really why I've been able to make a living with them for 7 years.
Certainly, it's peace of metal, if not peace of mind. No question about it.
Well, but the metal mind.
And this,
yes.
Well, that's a deeper philosophy. However, I know that we've kind of been through your case, but it's been a while since we've talked about it. I'm going to briefly summarize it that you were. You were at the beach boardwalk with your bicycle, and you saw a strange sign that you wanted some clarification on, which in essence said something to the effect that bicycles and skateboarders have to essentially surrender their property to the beach boardwalk. If the beach boardwalk tells them to leave, they have to leave their property there in the care of the beach boardwalk, or they will be given trespass orders for a year or something to that effect?
That's 75% accurate. In 10 seconds or less, the sign says verbatim, no bikes, skateboards, rollerblades permitted on boardwalk property or sidewalk will be confiscated by Seaside Company up to 72 hours.
Up to 72 hours. So in other words, it didn't just say you can't rollerblade here, we're going to call the cops. It said we are going to confiscate your property, which indeed sounds a little...
Even worse than that, it didn't say you cannot ride these objects. It said these devices are not permitted. It didn't indicate anything about use. The sign itself is a non sequitur of sorts.
So you had some legitimate questions. You presented them to the guards, the beach boardwalk goon squad, as I call it. And in the course of your rather innocent inquiries, apparently one of the officers took offense, got into an angry argument with you, demanded you leave. You retorted, all right, you would, but wanted to get your property. The exchange became more heated. He threw you to the ground, dragged you off, in essence had you... Now, were you actually arrested and taken into custody and held in jail?
Yeah, they put me into the station, too, there. I mean, and the whole thing occurred in 45 seconds to a minute and a half. You know, the guard had answered my question. I turned back to him and repeated the answer. And while I was doing that, the other guard, I think, misunderstood and thought that guard was telling me I was trespassing, when indeed he was actually informing me about the policy that they give trespass warnings to people who have their bicycles ridden there.
In any case, this intrusion on your life produced such a disruption that
you
lost thousands of dollars because you were setting up this fidget business with the help of, you already had thousands of inquiries.
We had about $25,000 invested in development of the business, and it happened 3 days before my first jury dart show after 6 years of in-person development and 60,000 units out the door. So, yeah, it was pretty traumatic for me, but the real key is I just want to see them change their policy. I made them over a period of months. Now, anybody who's familiar with the boardwalk, in front of the casino entrance door, there's two colors of cement, purple cement and red cement. The red cement is closer to the railroad tracks, the purple cement is closer to the building. The purple cement is Seaside Company property, but the red cement is city property since 1993 when Mr. Canfield signed it over to the city in exchange for a sidewalk improvement program. And where that goes is that I was on the red cement when they issued the ticket, and they told me I was trespassing, and then the next day I got them on tape telling me that I could not go anywhere on that side of the tracks from the corner of the Coconut Grove building, but in reality, that was public property.
So they were
on tape lying to me, and then when I went they were
trying to intimidate you from your proper use of public spaces.
The guards didn't know that they were lying because they were told by their superiors that was private property, but the superiors had given it to the city. So now that I have the title deed and there were four witnesses, and one thing, let me touch on the CPRB, the complaint. My biggest problem
is... The CPRB, of course, is the Citizens Police Review Board.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The day after the assault, I went to them and, I went to the police and I filed countercharges for assault and battery. And when I filed those countercharges, the officer took my statement and the name and number number of the witnesses, but he didn't actually type up the report that was added to the case until August 8th, and I was in there and gave the report June 25th. The first thing that hit paper from him was August 8th, and that was about 6 days after Chief Belcher checked out the case and looked at it. Then he made up his report and minimized all of my injuries and stripped the witnesses off of there. Now, you'd think, well, then they'd send it to the DA. Well, they didn't do that in August. They didn't do that in September or in October or in November. Not even really in December, because it was December 31st that the DA finally got this case and chose to no-file the case against me. So in the interim, I got famous on that Art Bell program on 400 radio stations with 20 million listeners. I got absolutely buried in mail within 30 days of the assault, and the pressure and the bill had come from my partner because we weren't making money at those events because my arm was in a sling and my voice was gone.
So you had indeed obligations to return fidgets to people. You weren't able to make them to meet those obligations, and you were trying to get some kind of damage and redress for this injury to your career, your livelihood, and your reputation.
Exactly. There's thousands of people right now waiting for their fingers and waiting to know what happened to me. I have letters from Strange Universe, the television program. I have people from Ball Aerospace and Boeing and Toyota, and letters from literally all over the country, all 50 states and Canada and Puerto Rico.
I've seen your packet of letters. Quite an impressive packet. Let me interrupt though to say that maybe what you can do is give us more of an update on Sunday, when you'll know how public this Tuesday hearing that you have coming up is.
That would be great. Yeah.
And the reason
I wanted to get this out is because it's damaging for them. And if anybody with an open mind, and I mean, I don't know how their lawyers are going to defend this with the facts, but anybody with an open mind that looks at this would be appalled and shocked. And I will definitely check back with you Sunday, and I apologize for switching topic or horse in midstream.
No, that's fine.
I wanted to get the information out there, because now that these complaints have been filed, for instance, yesterday I filed the complaint against Chief Belcher because he had his hands on the report before that was added. As I just said, today he was in Starbucks at the same time I went in there, and I repelled him like a magnet. I went into Starbucks and got my cup of coffee, and as soon as he saw me walk past him and towards the counter, him and whoever he was talking to got up and left. And in the middle of
you're just not popular. You're not popular with the police chief anymore, Shaz. This could be a crushing blow for
you. Yeah, I have the facts on that, and I just wish that back about 60 days ago, when I had called him up and spoken to him, or went to his office and talked to him on tape, and went to the CPRB, I just made an inquiry. I wasn't going to make a complaint. I simply wanted them to apologize for the mistakes that were made. He wasn't willing to do that. He told Gary Amani that nothing improper had happened, and I don't know how he possibly could have thought that, considering the facts of this.
Now, Shaz, nothing improper ever does happen in the Santa Cruz Police Department. Have you been following? Happy John Dine keeled over dead because of he was a suicidal guy.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the truth? Well, I'll tell one thing to this community is that, you know, I have had a really hard year and a half, and I really love the people of Santa Cruz, but the legislative and bureaucratic regulations around here really are screwed, especially the sleeping ban, and I think that there's more people that are against it than that are for it, but the problem is the people that are for it have the money and the connections. It's no secret. It was in the Sentinel yesterday. This is the most expensive place to live in the country, and you got to keep your yard clean, or if these riffraffs get in here, they'll goof up our nest, and that's really what's going on in this town on the higher levels, except for, I believe now, this new city council, and I really hope that the scenic beauty and the wonderful town that this is can be recaptured by the people, because I was here before the earthquake back in 1987, and I really enjoyed it, and I hope it gets back to that.
And we really enjoy you, Shaz. Call us back on Sunday.
Thank you, Robert. Have a great night, and God bless.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And that was the inimitable Shaz, the fidget man on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, Shaz. And we've been able to slow him down using all of our soothing skills. Has been co-host on this show. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our lines are open at 427-3772. A couple of comments about what Shaz said. Boy, you said so much. I don't know what to comment on, but...
Just a couple of comments about what's upcoming. We have in the studio with us Becky Johnson, who's just arrived. She has been doing some researching into shelter issues, and she and I also had a kind of a disagreement about how optimistic to be about the new city council. Perhaps the thing to do before Becky and I get into it, or maybe we should get into it first, I'm not quite sure what the order is, should be, is play this last night taped segment from Crone and Sugar on KZSC so people can get a sense of what the latest chit-chat is around the sleeping ban debate. That's not quite the latest. I talked to Sugar this morning about that. He's one of our council members. The council, for those who aren't unaware of this, is divided 4-3, progressive versus reactionary, though the reactionaries call themselves progressives. Rotkin, Matthews, and Hernandez all got endorsed by different progressive organizations, kind of a little camouflage activity there, or possibly some changing in midstream, more camouflage, I'd say, or perhaps bad judgment by mainline progressive organizations. In any case, the issue of the sleeping ban is one that is very pressing for a lot of us. You've heard me talk about it in great detail on this station. I've begun soliciting signatures and protest participation downtown. I'll be downtown at 1 o'clock tomorrow in front of New Leaf or in front of Blockbuster Video if it's raining. Also check Crown Books, the former Crown Books down near the Cinema 9, which has an overhang where you can kind of sit around at a table in the rain. In order to get the word out to the citizenry, that what we need is we need people to come to City Council meeting on December 8th, Tuesday, at 7 o'clock with a blanket and a sleeping bag and a determination to make a significant protest there if there is not a real change in the law on that date. You're going to hear lots of people tell you it's too soon, they can't do it, they're new in office, let them get their feet wet. Well, there's a lot more that's going to get wet than people's feet if there's a ban on sleeping in blankets throughout the winter. It's outrageous that there could such a thing be considered. If this were, you know, some other world or some other country and we were reading about it, we would consider this the height of barbarism. Instead, of course, it's Santa Cruz and business as usual. And it's just completely unacceptable that this ban should continue through the winter, particularly since the people who are elected to this city council were endorsed by organizations that endorsed ending the blanket and sleeping bans. The law that makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night in your vehicle or outside and on most private property, except for a fenced inside yard or backyard or three vehicles to a church property. Now, my producer is telling me we should talk about shelter first. Well, let's yield to that particular perspective. Why don't you pull up a chair there? In the studio with me, as I've said before, is activist Becky Johnson. She's a writer for Street Spirit. She's done a lot of inquiring into shelter issues. She was for 2 years on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board before she was unceremoniously bounced off the board for being out of favor with Day Center Duchess Karen Gillette. And here she is in the studio. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Robert. Yeah, one of the things that concerns me about this whole sleeping ban debate, and that is this kind of like, if there is not sufficient shelter, then the sleeping ban is completely wrong. And the word if bothers me. We know that there is not sufficient shelter. You know, with the numbers, 500 to 1,500 homeless in the city of Santa Cruz alone, and shelter spaces being probably about 180 or 190 spaces in the ISSP program each night. Obviously, those numbers don't match up. But this little shell game that has been played with the previous council, and I'm very anxious if the current council starts singing the same tune, is that, we had some spaces left over in the ISSP. The armory wasn't completely full. Therefore, we have sufficient shelter. And this is a concern because, obviously, if all the people who are sleeping in their vehicles, those who are sleeping, have little campsites out in the Poganip, or maybe they've curled up under someone's house with or without their permission, If all those people were somehow rousted out of those places and showed up at the ISSP program, it would be overwhelmed. Now, there are some other shelter programs, such as River Street Shelter. There's Families in Transition. And New Life Center, and also
they're full and they have waiting lists, right?
And the shelter project too, which gives vouchers to people in area motels. All of those programs are full and have waiting lists for them. The only program that has any room at all on an emergency basis is the ISSP, and that's a combination of sleeping in the area churches and up in the National Guard Armory. Now, part of the debate about the armory is how many people can the armory actually hold. Now, you perhaps heard Mike Rotkin previously and saying that the armory could hold 200 people. However, it's never held 200 people.
Well, how many people can you fit into a phone booth there, Becky?
Obviously, if you stuff and cram, you can fit more people in than if you have them under what would be called humane conditions. But the maximum that I've ever heard of the armory holding was 132 people. Another thing that concerned me is that I've heard two separate reports about how many people were housed at the armory. That should be a static number and not in dispute. When I talked to one of the directors, she indicated that there were 106 people in the armory. And then when I talked to a homeless man who had spent the night in the armory that same night, he said there were 120. That causes me some concern.
How would he know? Did he count them?
He said that the people who were up there went and did their own head count, and he overheard them saying that there were 120 people in.
Do you consider that crowded?
He said it was pretty crowded. And most reports I've had is that it can comfortably hold 100 people. And when it gets past 100, it starts getting pretty tight. And at 132, it was extremely crowded.
Now, we're not talking about beds, right? And also the armor. We're talking about places on the floor. And I guess another person we talked to, Steve Argue, the man who was assaulted for selling a paper, not the fellow we heard at the beginning of the hour, Frank Ross, but another man who was dragged off to jail for 3 days, and then suddenly charges all dropped. And he has his own show here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Actually, earlier today he did his show, and he's having a demonstration on the 12th of December. But, in fact, he said that the armory had lice in the blankets and that he didn't use it anymore because of that reason.
Yeah, and then the worker said, oh, no, they're potato bugs, which he disputed.
Well, maybe that's helpful because the armory doesn't serve any meals like the ISSP, that maybe they're expecting people to find their own food, you know.
Well, we did have that one report of lice, and, of course, that strikes a lot of fear in both people who are staying in the armory and also the people they're providing, because it's a huge problem if they do have lice, and they have had problems with that in the past.
I mean, when I was homeless, and that's happened frequently at different times, usually I'm in much better shape. I have a vehicle, I'm living in my car, I'm traveling. Like when I worked in Santa Barbara as a homeless advocate, I was homeless for a number of years. But again, getting back to the question at hand has to do with you're talking about the dangers of these shelter numbers. I think that when we talked to Community Action Board worker Sandy Brown, who worked with Paul Brindell of the Shelter Project, came to City Council on November 10th, and they together put together the latest shelter emergency report, which admitted explicitly for the first time in terms of actual numbers that both the winter and the summer shelter was inadequate. There were people outside, and given a sleeping ban, that means after 11 they were either illegal or they stayed asleep without covering up with blankets. And there is no other way to read it. If you're outside after 11 o'clock at night in Santa Cruz and you fall asleep, that's a crime. Even if you're a well-dressed person, theoretically, it's a crime. Even if you're in your own car, in your own driveway, it's a crime. And if you cover up with a blanket, that is also a crime. So if there's no shelter for people after 11 o'clock at night, that was documented on November 10th, then there are numbers of people who are criminals. But not criminals on the basis of anything they do, but on the basis of their status. Let's say their basic human status as a human being who has to sleep at night and keep warm. This is an abusive human rights violation. And, you know, it's amazing how many times one says this into the ether to hear the city council echo coming back,
Maybe next February we'll work on this. We heard David Silva say
his optimistic prediction that there would be something by next February.
What do you think about that, Becky?
Well, first I wanted to go back to something else Sandy Brown said that also concerned us, and that is that the county has come back and juggled their numbers to say that there are only 500 homeless in the city of Santa Cruz. And of course you can make your numbers look all that much better if you lop off on one end how many homeless people are out on the streets, and then you estimate up how many shelter bed spaces you have, and then you estimate down, you actually give bogus numbers about how many people are actually in the program. You can make it look on paper like that we have sufficient shelter space.
That's what I was afraid Keith Sugar was buying into when I heard him talking at different forums earlier on, although I think he may be more skeptical now, though I'm not quite clear of his position. There are 500 to 1,500 homeless people by my estimates, and again, the problem is, you know, where is the authority for these estimates?
Well, we had that one snapshot estimate back in 1990 that was put about 1,100 that night, and in the city, right, and that we've heard estimates that the ISSP program is running 10 to 20 people, more people seeking shelter this year versus last year. So from that, we say the numbers, if anything, it's gone up, not gone down in that time period.
Of course, Rotkin and other sunny apologists here would say, oh, well, that just means that people are using the ISSP now because of the fine outreach program done by the ISSP now that it's in the capable hands of Karen Gillette and Mike Bustos, see.
Well, I haven't heard any reports that it's run any better or any worse than it was before the merger. In fact, Wendy Butler is still in charge of that program, and she's the one that has the contact with the churches. And I'd say that the persons using the surface wouldn't find any huge changes from last year to this year.
Well, I know that Sandy Brown, as well as you and I, we all showed up at the Don't Sleep Tonight night, which, here's a quick report, folks, that was the November 30th night where we all kind of assembled at the town clock at 11, wrapped in blankets, encouraging the police department to arrest us to meet their quotas rather than the homeless if they had to do it, or to do their own civil disobedience and not arrest anyone. Well, apparently the police were doing their civil disobedience because there were at least four squad cars parked in different places around the town clock, and not a one of them came out to arrest us, even though we had blankets on after 11 o'clock at night, which, I suppose, is a fine thing, except it's always been my experience that protests are ignored by the police, who then later go on to arrest isolated and more vulnerable homeless people for exactly the same behavior, when it's even more horrendous because while we're doing it as a form of symbolic protest, they're doing it because they need to do it, and they get hassled, they get arrested, they get ticketed, ID'd, searched, they get their property confiscated.
What's more life-sustaining activity than insulating from the cold? It's just an absolutely life-sustaining activity. And apparently Laura Tucker was inspired by our 11 p.m. protest at the town clock and has decided to pick up the banner on that and have a symbolic protest from 11 to 12 every Monday night at the town clock until the city council actually grapples with this sleeping ban and blanket ban in a way that those of us who were members of the committee to repeal the sleeping ban would consider to be our bottom line of what we expect.
That's good. That means that we're going to have, I guess if we look at the protest schedule, that means on Saturday, do you know when the parade is actually going to happen on Saturday?
I have not been able to find that information. Our good times said, but if previous years, I think it starts around 10.
We're talking about the Christmas parade. Before you leave, Becky, I know you're hustling to get back to your own work, but Christmas parade is at 10 on Saturday for those who want to be there. There's a series of floats, and one of them is an anti-consumer, pro-homeless float, and you might want to check that out. I'm not sure. Where does the parade begin? Do you know?
I think it starts at Cathcart and then moves up towards the town clock. That's what has happened in previous years. I heard this one float, they're going to have elves and chains or something.
Elves and chains, or perhaps blankets and shreds. I don't know. Then, of course, on Monday night, there will be this Don't Sleep Tonight Memorial Weekly protest that apparently Tough Love Laura Tucker is doing. Tucker is the other member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless that was dumped at the behest of Karen Gillette. Then on Tuesday, you're going to have a city council meeting coming your way, and that's going to be at 7 o'clock, and you can actually call tonight. I still encourage people, even if you called once, call again at 429-3550, 429-3550, and then push the pound key. I know it's after hours, but actually that's easier, and say, end the sleeping ban. I want the sleeping ban eliminated before the Christmas recess happens, or we will make sure the city, and including its businesses, gets no sleep.
Yeah, let's let the homeless have human rights for Christmas.
Hey, wouldn't that be a sweet gift? You're tuned to Free Radio. Bye-bye, Becky. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Becky's left, but maybe we can get her to join us later on the phone. She was actually very, very optimistic, as was David Silva, who you heard earlier. And almost everyone I talked to, when after Catherine Byers, I felt completely inadequate speech, which I believe I played a segment of on the last last part of Bathroom Spheres Broadsides, or maybe the one before my last show. This is a twice-a-week show, by the way, folks, for those of you who don't know. 6 o'clock on Thursday until 8, and 11 o'clock in the morning on Sunday until 1:30 in the afternoon. So she was very optimistic. So were the rest of opponents of the sleeping ban that I talked to. I was not at all. I thought, we're getting lots of talk, but no agendas, no timetables, no real commitments for specific programs of action, just a kind of a, general goodwill sentiment, which Byers is so good at, but unfortunately it's not good enough. Now it seems she feels pressured enough, perhaps by the phone calls at 429-3550, City Council, press the pound key, that all you folks have been turning in. And that may have made some difference. I think it has to have made some difference. But I don't think it's made enough difference yet. And I'm thinking that what we need to do is really make a showing downtown. And the way to do that is to organize it. I'm going to be out there at 1 o'clock tomorrow at a table in front of New Leaf or Blockbuster Video if it's raining. And then again at 5:30 trying to organize. I encourage you to come on down, help out. We're going to try to get people to sign petitions. More important, to volunteer for a campaign of civil disobedience downtown and of loud civil information to shoppers to let them know just what kind of a community they're patronizing here in Santa Cruz, a community that will not allow its poorest people to sleep at night, all for the kind of vain hope of getting more shoppers to town. I mean, it is the merchants that are the biggest stumbling block to changing this law. That seems to me to be obviously the case. It's been the case for decades, and they've got to step out of the way with this one, or we've got to step in their way. It seems to me that's really the way to go, and it's also the way to get media attention on this issue. I'm not talking about illegal behavior. I'm talking about perfectly legal political protest that persuades people to boycott bigotry downtown, and that's what I'm going to be proposing. And that's what I'm going to be suggesting tomorrow at 1 o'clock and at 5:30, assuming I don't get too much sicker than I am. I'm in kind of, I don't have walking pneumonia like Keith Sugar has apparently, or had. But I have one of those colds that probably 98% of you out there have. But speaking of Sugar, let's review what happened last night on radio station KZS. So you'll get some idea. The sleeping ban was brought up. And I will interrupt Sugar and Crone. It was mostly Sugar who talked about it. And the host was Michael somebody of Talk About. And we'll hear what's actually being said around this issue. And then I'll read you some communications I had with Sugar this morning about suggestions we had around what supposedly is going to be proposed on Tuesday. So hang with us here.
Here we have, a real block, and I guess you have to be careful coming in. You can't promise all this stuff, and you're always, I think, going to be a little bit more cautious and conservative than you are when you're running. I mean, have you felt that? I mean, are you got some bold plans? Are we going to pass like a living wage law? Are we going to be, you know, are we going to, are there going to be some dramatic changes, or do you have to be kind of cautious and judicious as you go about your business?
Yeah, I think the best way to answer that is to say that, you know, consistent with our positions on the campaign, everything has to be looked at with a critical eye. Everything has to be subjected to critical analysis. Will there be sweeping changes?
Keith Sugar is the new council
member. If it's consistent with the best interests of the city, after we look at it with a very, very critical eye and full, and I underline full, community input.
That will probably be the biggest change, that we're going to
democratizing the process.
Full community input at every
turn. This is Chris Crone.
And seek to not forget about who brought us and
member.
Who elected us.
Okay, we got a call. We'll get back to that.
Hi, you're on Talk About.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to address the point about bringing in full community involvement and relate that to the sleeping ban and the criminalization of people getting some rest who can't afford to pay for other means besides sleeping in a car or a sleeping bag or something. And I just want to know what the new members of the city council,
there you go, how about the old,
what they have
ban
to say about that, and what, because I, from my understanding, it's like a very late hour for this concern. They've been putting it off and the repeal. So I just wanted to hear what you guys had to say about that.
Good, thanks.
You're welcome.
How about the old sleeping ban?
Yeah,
favorite symbolic issue of our city. I
guess. That's right. The sleeping ban is in its current form is I think unworkable. Unworkable for the reason that it is simply not, I think, humane to be rousting people who are simply trying to seek shelter from the rain. My attitude could possibly be different on that issue if, in fact, we had beds for everybody. If we had accessible beds, if we had safe beds, if we had clean beds for everybody. But I don't believe that's the case. And as long as that's the case, I feel very ill at ease with an ordinance that criminalizes, the act of sleeping. Now,
it's hard to rouse somebody if you have nowhere to rouse them to. I mean, it is inhumane in a way.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, one of the things that we're doing is we're looking for alternatives to the sleeping ban because, we want to protect the rights of the homeless, and we also want to protect the rights of everyone else who lives here. You know, we want to protect the rights of residents. We want to protect the rights of business. And
you're up against the old slippery slope. I mean, it was always Rodkin's thing. If you're too nice to them, or if you let them do it, then they all come in. They all hear about it on this hobo email list or something, and they all come in from all over, and they know we're an easy town, and then you get you up to your neck with them. And that was the slippery slope, right?
Yeah, but, you know, I don't really buy into that.
No, I
don't really buy into that at all. I think there's a way to decriminalize sleeping without compromising the interests of businesses or residents who historically have complained about, you know, the homeless and that sort of thing. And we're working on several ideas. I think it's critical, though, that we be given the time to, again, look at this critically and make a sound analysis of what needs to be done. I don't want to simply act on this thing impulsively and then come up with a situation that nobody's happy with. I think there's a win-win situation out there.
And that's something that we're going to look hard at.
We have already begun that process of looking hard. We have to have short-term and long-term solutions here.
Right.
Short term, we need to make sure there's safe and secure places for people to sleep, and we need to make the case to the people of Santa Cruz that people are not safe and secure in sleeping and go about looking for those places. Right. The long term, we have to.
I'm interrupting this statement by Chris Crone that you're hearing on last night's KZSC show. This is one of the things that's made me very discouraged. This is the same kind of rhetoric which Mike Rodkin uses about safe places for people to sleep. It's clear there aren't safe places for people to sleep, period. There are more than 750 homeless people out there tonight, some say up to 1,500, and there are less than 200 spaces. I mean, that's simple arithmetic. And it's also simple arithmetic. They're not going to find 700 spaces in the next 2 weeks. And so the obvious thing is you decriminalize it, or else you accept the fact that the criminalization continues. Or, I don't know, you put the police to work on other projects where they can't go after homeless people, or you arm the homeless people. I don't know what you do, but you have to have some straightforward approach to this issue, which doesn't sit around and talk about developing a community consensus. You don't need a community consensus to assert basic human rights. In fact, community consensus has nothing to do with basic human rights. Basic human rights are basic human rights. That's, for example, why you have courts, because courts don't rely on majority rule. Now, we already have majority rule, ironically, which is behind this. The majority has voted, 61% of the Santa Cruz population has voted for these four council members, all of whom say they oppose the sleeping ban. Time for them to vote against the sleeping ban. Not to form committees, not to discuss it, not to put out kind of meaningless resolutions, not to hope the police pay some attention, but to end the sleeping ban. It's very simple. They have the votes. They can end the sleeping ban. And when you hear Crone talking instead about consensus and building a community opinion, this kind of stuff makes me very apprehensive. Continuing.
Everybody. You want to get that call?
No, go ahead.
We have to include everybody. Business, students, residents, you know, community members.
Homeowners.
Activists, homeless people in this dialogue. Right. We have to bring those people together in the next few months and solve this.
Right, but if you want to send a symbolic message to where you're at and what's going on and it's going to be different, that's the thing to change that's going to get people. Hi, you're on Talk About.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Sure.
Before the previous call, I was sitting here trying to figure out how to turn the water issue into the sleeping ban issue, and I was going to comment how, just to go speak at the city council, a disabled person has to go without taking their pills because the water fountain there has been shut down to keep homeless people from sleeping there at night, keep homeless people away. So we're not only changing the sleeping ban, but we have a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of bad habits from this bad, inhumane law being in place along that we have to change. So it's going to be a long, hard struggle. I mean, you know, when they're discriminating against disabled people, even being able to take pills so they keep homeless people away, you know, we're fighting up against a lot of bad habits. So I wish you guys a lot of luck. You know what you have to do. You know, I got you all on videotape with all your promises. Not to worry, I can show it to you anytime you want. And good luck.
Are you making an audio tape of this one?
I have a friend making an audio tape of this one. Thank you.
Appreciate that, David.
I also have the 1996, the old council's campaign promises on tape, too, if you guys want to see those. So I have them all.
That and what, $2 will get you a really good latte?
No, you're gonna just come over and have some tea. This is David Silva.
Yeah, sure.
And that was an unfortunate call from David Silva to the show. He admitted afterward, he kind of apologized for that call. Notice again the unfortunate terms which the dialogue is framed as though it's a long, hard struggle. There's no long, hard struggle. It's a quick, simple vote. Four votes, say, end the sleeping ban. And then, as one person suggested to me a moment ago, you ask forgiveness. You don't ask permission for human rights. If people don't like it, you ask forgiveness. But first you do it, and then you argue about it later. And then if there's dispute about it, then you can hold hearings and discussions to amend and reform. In the first instance, your responsibility is to guarantee people their human rights this winter. It's really, you know, pretty straightforward as far as I'm concerned. David didn't quite get that issue in as he spoke to the city council members. However, the next caller did.
God, Chris knew it was David, and I didn't.
You didn't?
I feel bad now.
You should feel bad, Keith. No, I think you guys are doing a great job. That was a great call hearing from Luna Tree.
Sure.
You know, and the issue of water is really so important. I struggled here to make the tie-in to water because I thought we were just on a tree thing, but it's nice to know we're trees and people and life, and I think we're entering a creative era in this town with this new council. We'll be able to do some creative solutions. I see business people coming in and being excited about trying to help on the homeless issue. I really have a lot of high hopes with this new city council.
Good.
Congratulations.
Thanks for calling.
Unfortunately, we need more than high hopes. We need some real action, and that is not yet in the stars, on the paper, or even on the agenda, which, of course, is the issue for those of us outside. I'm not one of them, but there are a lot of them out there, and that's the one that has to be brought up. High hopes don't do it. Best wishes don't do it. Friendly comments don't do it. I'm not quite sure what is going to do it. I suggest high-profile demonstrations downtown might be a good first step. In any case, the next caller is a familiar voice.
City Council's money will grow on trees, right? You're listening to KZSC Santa Cruz, and we're here with Keith Sugar and Christopher Crone. We're talking about the new Santa Cruz City Council. Give us a call, 459-4036. There's only one phone line, and so if somebody's on it, just wait your turn. Hi, you're on Talk About.
Hi, a minute ago you talked about...
I'll turn your radio down, will you? Okay. Go ahead.
The living wage ordinance being a...
And actually, this is not the familiar caller that I was hoping to hear, and I'm going to kind of let this pass because my interest in the show is not so much in the living wage, although it's good to have a living wage. I could go for that. I think that would be helpful, definitely, and perhaps even definitely a necessity. But again, we're talking about the crisis for people outside at the moment. Anyway, there were more callers on the sleeping ban, and some of them were less gentle than David Silva, and to the point they actually got what appeared to be some kind of commitments. We'll tune back into this conversation.
Just some quick background on living wage. Living wage is an issue that's being talked about in many cities, and it's been passed in several cities, including Boston, Oakland, and Los Angeles. In Boston, Los Angeles, and San Jose. San Jose, the living wage is put at $9.75 an hour plus 50 cents or $1 an hour for benefits. And if you don't provide benefits, it's pegged at $10.50 an hour. We are beginning that process here in Santa Cruz to talk about a living wage and what a living wage would be in the city of Santa Cruz. And yes, that will be on the agenda in this new council session. Great, and that was me that called it radical, nobody else. But it's really kind of where we're at right now in terms of community planning. It seems like an interesting idea. Hi, you want to talk about?
Hi, Mike. I wanted to call and talk to the council members about the upcoming vote on fluoridation of our city waters. And even though they're not going to be, it's an initiative effort to ban the use of our water system to deliver anything that has a medical or physical intent, I'd like to know where they stand on the issue, and also if there's a way that the city council could help the dialogue happen in the community around it with sponsoring a forum, but to be more actively engaged in a very important civic discussion, I guess.
Okay, thanks. Fluoridation.
Yeah, it goes back to what I said earlier about subjecting everything that comes before the council to a critical analysis. Not just a political analysis, and there simply seems to be no hard science backing up the claims that on the cost benefit analysis or all other things being equal, fluoridation is necessary or a good idea.
Right.
So I don't think that's going to be a tough call. I think I'm really
fluoridation's a communist plot, always has been. $120,000 is going to cost for that special election. I'm really worried about that. But that's the decision that the previous council made. I think it was a prudent one. I think it was well debated and well discussed. But it's just a shame that we have to spend $120,000 for a special election.
Is the state pushing that on us?
No, but if we get a mandate or a majority of votes from the people, it will be much more difficult to overturn, as I understand, in court if the state at some point in the future comes down on us. Hi, you're on Talk About.
Hi, I'll tell you what's a real shame is that the city of Santa Cruz just spent about $100,000 for an environmental impact report for a skate park they're not even going to build. That's
right on, man.
Absurd.
Totally agree.
Also, I wanted to comment on the downtown ordinances and how repressive I feel they are in people's civil liberties. You get tickets for sitting down on a concrete block there, like what they call a planter box. It's basically like a curb around a tree, and you get a ticket for that. You have to get dragged through the court system, and you'll probably be found guilty. These downtown ordinances need to be repealed as well as also one possible solution, speaking of downtown, to this water crisis is to get rid of those people spraying the sidewalk. You know, they spend $50,000 a year to spray the sidewalk, and that's, a huge waste of water. So there's a lot that needs to be done.
All right, thanks for calling.
shit. You guys are never going to come back, are you?
Good points.
Oh,
very good points.
We have the best callers of any talk show ever.
You do, and they ask tough questions.
So, it is tough. I got a ticket today. You get a ticket if you, I can find something to do downtown that takes more than 2 hours or 3 hours now, and the parking changed. It's a lot rougher down there. People are complaining about sitting around, the skateboarding. I mean, it's not like come down and spend money in our downtown. I mean, not for me.
Well, there's an old mindset that says that the way to regulate is to criminalize, and you know, I don't believe that. I think that we, yes,
skateboarding
we
is not a crime.
Skateboarding, my friend, is not a crime.
Skateboarding is a warning.
Let me put it this way: depending on where you skateboard, skateboarding is not a crime. I mean, if you aim for a bunch of people on walkers and in wheelchairs, and you know, I mean, but that kind of behavior is by far the exception rather than the norm. I think that there is a way to accommodate everyone's uses of the downtown without necessarily criminalizing this and criminalizing that.
Just a more welcome attitude internally. Like, you are a people coming down here, you know, we don't want to tack $12 onto your experience. Hi, you're on Talk About. We're moving along here. Hi, you're on Talk About.
Hi there.
Hi.
Really, first I want to congratulate your city council candidates who've become victorious for going up in front of the public. Hey there, guys.
Can I just say to that last caller, I would like them to know that skateboarding will be a high priority, and I hope you come out and push us and cajole us and make us do the right thing on skateboarding. We either need a temporary skateboard park or we need a permanent skateboard park.
Right. Now. Good. That's interesting. Okay, go ahead, Cole.
Yeah, I'm all for a skateboard park now as well. And I also want to bring up a couple other issues. The first one, of course, is one that's already been raised before, which is the sleeping ban. It's all very well to talk about studying the issue and getting everybody involved and getting everybody agreed, and I think that's important and a good thing to do. The real question is, with one council meeting left in the year, are you guys going to push for a special session, let's say, on the 15th, so you can take some significant changes so that police will not be towing the vehicles of people who are living in them and are forced to do so? Because, as you pointed out, Keith, there is a significant and admitted shelter discrepancy between the people that they're actually available for to go into shelters. I said a shelter space that's available, which is less than 200 for emergency, and 500 to 1,500 homeless people in Santa Cruz. You've got that, you know, horrible discrepancy and the horrible weather we have. And I don't think this can wait for, you know, a long discussion over the winter. And a lot of us really feel, as you know, because we've talked about this before, that the issue needs some immediate action on the Tuesday agenda, which doesn't really boil down to, you know, simply getting the churches to hope to offer a few more spaces or to have a commission get together to talk about it. Why not?
Yeah.
Because you need decriminalization over the winter so that the many hundreds of people who are out there are not in fear of tickets every night, are not in fear of having their vans towed, are not in fear of being arrested and having their property confiscated.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, why not look for the extra beds?
Oh, that's fine. I got no problem with that, as long as you're also addressing this other issue at your December 8th city council meeting, which is the last council meeting of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
otherwise, we're all stuck through the winter with, you know, police essentially harassing people, because that's been the major complaint around the sleeping ban.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think we are going to be taking some action on Tuesday.
Uh-huh. Can you give us any thoughts about what that might be? I know you may not know exactly, but, you know, along what lines? Or?
Right now, we're looking at... again, as I said, we're looking at revising it perhaps by February. But what we're looking at on an interim basis is basically coming to an understanding with the community and with the police that the sleeping ban is really not something that needs to be enforced absent some sort of disruptive or criminal type behavior. And I don't mean criminal within the meaning of a sleeping ban.
Certainly not like perjury with an intern.
Right. I mean, you know, what we are communicating, what we intend to communicate to the police is that this is really to receive the absolute low enforcement of the sleeping ban is to receive the absolutely lowest priority.
And that's the best we can do.
Yeah, and until we, you know, you know, because we're new in this job. I mean, we haven't even been to a real council meeting yet. Until we can craft something that is going to withstand a court challenge, something that will withstand the complaints and criticisms of the business community. You know, and it's not just that we want to withstand the complaints and criticisms of the business community. It would be nice if we could reach consensus. I believe consensus is out there, but you don't get consensus by simply acting without knowing what all the facts is.
Sure.
Ma'am.
Okay. Are you suggesting then that what you plan to do is to... Do you feel that you can actually... Is there a mechanism for holding the police to that kind of standard through the winter when they've never done that before? What kind of prospects do you...
Holding the police to what kind of standard?
To a standard of... Well, the hope I would have is if the police are being told, don't arrest people for sleeping who have no place to go for numerous reasons because they have their own shelter, shelters are unsuitable because there's obviously a lack of space. How can you... You can't tell the police what to do because you're the city council and the city manager makes those rules. I guess what you can do is you're thinking of some kind of resolution whereby you would say ticket only on complaint if there's a serious health or public safety hazard and other laws are being violated or something of that sort?
Yeah, what we're thinking about is simply, passing a resolution that you know, at least in the interim, tells the police that there are much better things to do than to harass the homeless. And unless, again, they're causing some kind of criminal, unless there's some kind of criminal conduct going on, it is to receive the absolute lowest priority in terms of enforcement.
I think that's really a positive step, and I think I might also suggest to you that you might want to consider long-term changes for agenda activity, wherein, like in Santa Barbara and Santa Monica, citizens can put on the agenda items, which here in Santa Cruz, for example, only council members can. And just this whole process of opening up oral communications will, I think, broaden that discussion and debate. And
thanks, caller.
Yeah, thanks. Good.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. All right, the number again, 459-4036. We've got two city council members here, and we're throwing everything at them. And first we congratulate them, and then we say, well, yeah, what have you done for me lately? it's great to have you guys come in, and everybody call up if they got any questions, any issues. There's certainly a lot of stuff out there. Is there any stuff that gets you guys really excited that you're really ready to jump in on? And any real vision out there for what you can do?
Garbage.
Garbage.
What people think of as garbage. Discards. Uh-huh. We need to unfill the landfill. Uh-huh. We need to stop filling up land. I mean, that really excites me.
Uh-huh.
And it's good that Christopher Crone, councilmember, is excited by dealing with landfill and garbage and problems. And, of course, they're all very excited about stopping the beach boardwalk giveaway and returning and rescinding the decision of the November City Council, the old Rotkin Matthews Kennedy Council, to give away the beach boardwalk Tidewater property, or the Tidewater property to the beach boardwalk. That's good. I'm glad they're rescinding it. Why can't they also rescind the sleeping ban on the same agenda? They're going to do that on December 8th. Why not the sleeping ban? And I felt very positive when I heard this show originally, when I talked to Keith Sugar on the air, and when I talked to him the next day, this morning, about the issue. But again, after talking to several other people, including former attorney Ray Glock-Grunike, who has fought the sleeping ban and the camping ban for two decades, and talking to Sandy Brown, who, and to Paul Brindell of the Community Action Board. I mean, some of the thoughts that came up were, some were positive, some were negative, but if all they have on the agenda for December 8th is a sort of a to the police, please don't ticket people during the winter, we urge you not to do that, at least one very well-placed service provider who doesn't want to give her his name has told me, that's bullshit. They already say they're not ticketing people except on complaint. The police do. The police already say that they've made it the lowest priority. The police already say that they're doing this already, and so they're going to continue doing exactly what they did before. So I sent a memo to Keith Sugar. Can you dig it? A memo this morning. I'm going to dig it out of this pile of papers here so I can read you what I recommended they do. I mean, I recommend that we demand they end the sleeping ban on December 8th, at least with a first reading. No ifs, ands, ors, or buts. But in the event that they don't, this is what I suggested. I said to them, what is really needed in the current shelter crisis, a well-established fact under resolutions from the City Council from 1990, 1995, and 1998, all still ongoing resolutions, is a suspension of the entire camping ban so that people can actually shelter themselves from the cold and the elements. I mean, it's really kind of ridiculous to say, well, you can sleep, but, you know, don't put up a tent. You got to stay wet out there, or you got to trespass on somebody else's property. Or, I mean, in other words, I'm saying that the real, what you really need is not only abolition of the camping ban, but you need sheltering spaces for people, optional sheltering spaces, or the right of people to make their own shelters. I'm not suggesting that that be put on the agenda. That would be too radical, heavens to Betsy. But a bare minimum is that people not be arrested for the basically taking the human right seriously and doing the human need that has to be done every night of sleeping and covering up with blankets. That cannot be negotiable. If that's negotiable, you got nothing else to you got nowhere to go but, you know, but the grave. I mean, there has to be, that's the bottom line. You have to start there at least with that as a basic human right. And I continued in this letter, I didn't say that, I'm just giving you that as my extemporary speech, but the Community Action Board, a knowledgeable service provider that has regularly surveyed homeless needs in the city and county, operates under a policy that is inappropriate, that it is inappropriate to enforce the camping ban, get this, the camping ban, not just the sleeping ban, but this Community Action Board, which is a very sort of staid, liberal organization in town, has asserted that the camping ban, the entire camping ban itself, should not be enforced as long as there is inadequate shelter. It's not just you shouldn't arrest people for sleeping, but you shouldn't arrest people for camping and putting up a tent. This is established wisdom among shelter providers who have their heads screwed on straight and who are not, you know, lapping at the butt or at the fount of funding, as some shelter providers are. But this one is not, and it says this. Basic human rights concerns and the existing shelter crisis both require, at the very least, that the council can do on December 8th, that's next Tuesday at 7 o'clock, when you should show up there with your blanket, everybody, is to repeal these two odious provisions, the blanket ban and the sleeping ban. Two council sessions would be required, possibly a special one on December 15th and after the December 8th session for the second reading of repealing the sleeping and blanket bans, and the action would prompt controversy. It is a crucial time for those outside, and the issue cannot wait. The initiative, the Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative, has been thoroughly debated and examined. It got more than 3,000 signatures asking to be put on the ballot. It was endorsed by virtually all the organizations that supported the victorious council majority. And more to the point, it is a minimum and moderate proposal, probably too moderate. Council is reportedly considering the proposal that police be given a directive to enforce the camping ban or its sleeping and blanket provisions as the lowest priority, only on complaint, etc. Police and their potential allies claim that this is already the case. Police will probably construe council failure to act on the minimal sleeping blanket ban repeal as a form of council ambivalence, and they will continue their current policy of harassment. I interrupt my reading here to catch a phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, is this the Uncle Dennis show?
I'm sorry?
I thought Uncle Dennis was on Thursday nights.
This is Bathrop Spears Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor.
Oh, Uncle Dennis show starts at 9. Huh. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fine. Thank you very much. Again, I'm reading a memo to Keith Sugar and other council members trying to get them to put something tougher on the agenda. They don't want to put the sleeping and blanket bans on the agenda. So I suggest that. That said, and with the understanding that we feel the sleeping and blanket ban repeal is really the minimum acceptable option, we recommend the following proposals if the council majority wants to go with the resolution rather than the law change approach. 1. Specify in the resolution that police giving tickets or issuing move-on orders do so, 1. As the lowest priority, and 2. Only on complaint where bona fide interests are being affected and some real danger to health and safety exists. We recommend the following proposals... exists. The police department should be instructed to note down A, the complainant, the name of the person complaining, and B, the specific danger alleged to health and safety. City Council set up and empower a working group that will meet weekly beginning December 15th, which includes a council member, homeless advocates, homeless people, and a police officer. This group will take any complaints about police harassment or citation under the camping and blanket bans and under the equivalent parks and rec statutes. There's a parks and rec law that does the same thing, makes it illegal to sleep at night. City Council shall ask the Police Department and Parks and Rec Department to forward within 3 working days any camping ban-type citations. A public roster shall be kept of these citations. The City Attorney shall be directed to suspend all prosecutions under the camping ban law and the parallel Parks and Rec statute. Now, when I talked to Keith Sugar, he told me that that was impossible, but he doesn't think the City Attorney covers those prosecutions. I'm pretty sure he's wrong about that issue. I'm reading a memo that I wrote to Keith Sugar and other council members today urging them to tighten up anything they put on the agenda. In fact, forget putting anything on the agenda except for the bare minimum, at least go for the sleeping and blanket ban repeals. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Norse, and I am scrambling to look for the call-in number, because there's a show beginning on television, Channel 71, Voices from the Village, which has, get this, 3 council members on the air. And those council members are Byers, Fitzmaurice, and Crone. And you can call them up. You don't have to talk to me. You know my opinion already. You can talk to those council members, and you can tell them what you think of this sleeping ban law and demand that they take action on the 8th. And that they have a special session on the 15th to deal with this issue, not next week, not next year. But unfortunately, I'm missing the call-in number, so maybe I can get my producer to call me with the call-in number again, because it appears that in my haste, I have mislaid it. So here we have an incoming call. Hi there. 425-4920. That's 425-4920. I want to thank you, producer, for calling in. 425-4920 is Voices from the Village, and that is on currently on cable television, Channel 71, for those of you who are ritzy enough to have cable. And on that show is council members Byers, Fitzmaurice, and Crone. Those are 3 of the 4 votes that supposedly are committed to ending the sleeping ban. Tell them to act now, not later. Or else perhaps possibly put everybody up at their house. I don't know. So that's something you can do, something I hope you do. And more important, I hope you show up at council meeting on the 8th and that you call the city council. You can call them now. Even if you've called them before, call them again. Tell them don't sell out to these dream proposals about hoping the police are going to do something if they feel like it. Or, you know, gee, let's hope they all get humane all of a sudden. 429-3550 is the city council number. Put the sleeping and blanket bans on the ballot on the 8th. And I guess the other suggestions I had to do with this resolution. You heard my ideas on that. We obviously need a continuing monitoring body throughout the winter if the police department is going to be entrusted itself with being nice to the homeless. You know, it's really a stretch for me to believe that's going to happen for a number of reasons. I mean, it's interesting. You heard at the beginning of the hour Frank Ross talk about being ticketed for having a paper. But what you didn't hear, what you, or those of you who are new to this show don't know, is that another man got a ticket a month before Frank Ross, Anthony Douglas, for selling Street Spirit, the homeless newspaper, in front of the Cinema 9. His papers were confiscated. He was told not to sell papers. He was given a $162 ticket. We immediately phoned the mayor and sent a letter to the city council, which was forwarded to the police chief. And the police chief immediately apologized, had ordered the papers returned, and said that this is a wrong use of this ordinance, because the ordinance actually specifically exempts selling papers. It's one of those nasty downtown ordinances that are supposed to make sure that nobody but merchants in their shops get to sell anything downtown, even if people are starving and hungry and constitute no meaningful competitive threat to the business whatsoever. It's one of those nasty gentrification laws, anti-homeless, anti-hippie laws, that we want this council to overturn, and as soon as possible. The downtown ordinances need to go. Anyway, the The police chief had already informed us that it was legal. He informed us that he knew, and we presume he informed his police force. I mean, that's what would assume to be the natural response. Of course, he hadn't, because Frank Ross got a ticket shortly thereafter from... Actually, he got a ticket from a Parks and Rec ranger, so that was not on Belcher's police force. He can't be blamed for that. And from, you heard that long interview, a California Highway Patrol officer, a female officer, gave him another ticket. Again, not the direct responsibility of Belcher, but Belcher's officer did ticket Steve Argue, drag him to the ground, put him in handcuffs, take him off to jail for four days total, and pumped up additional charges against him, including felony charges of terrorist threats, all of which disappeared within 4 days. This is Belcher's firm and clear policy of informing his police department about what the laws of Santa Cruz are. Not very reassuring. Not very reassuring for homeless people under the sleeping ban either, I would have to say. Similarly, we know that Officer Malate, who supposedly trains the hosts downtown, has been observed harassing an old man downtown with false readings on the panhandling ordinance. I think I've talked about this before. John Telfair, a 68-year-old man, was told, maybe what I should do is read my letter to the Citizens Police Review Board, which I recently wrote on this issue, and I'm turning it out as a flyer under the rather colorful title. Where the hell is it? It's called A Letter to the Citizens Police Review Board. Oh, boy. Harassing Old Men Downtown. And I guess I may have to paraphrase it because I'm having trouble actually locating it. But the gist of it is, and I think I've... disabled man for holding up a sign that read something like, "Need help traveling east to visit my wife," while Telfair was standing within 50 feet of the change-making machine on Pacific and Church. He did not warn Telfair as required before issuing any such citation. More important, Malate didn't know the law or intentionally was disregarding the wording of the law because, as those of you know who are legal eagles around the downtown ordinances, and perhaps more and more of you are becoming legal eagles, it's not illegal to hold up a sign anywhere in Santa Cruz at any time. It just isn't. I suppose if you hold up a sign that's 50 feet by 50 feet and you're blocking traffic, that might be illegal. But a small, personally held sign is never illegal. And Telfair's sign wasn't illegal, and the city attorney confirmed that and dropped the ticket. But this was after Malate not only lied to him about this issue, or let's put it this way, misinformed him on this issue. Let's be generous. Let's assume Malate is simply incompetent and not malicious. Malate also told him that he couldn't sit down and hold up a sign. He had to stand. Now, it is true under the downtown ordinances that you can't sit down and ask for spare change verbally. That's illegal. Thank you, oh brilliant Kennedy Matthews Rotkin City Council. That was an ordinance passed by the City Council in 1994 that badly, badly needs to be repealed. But it is not true that you can't sit down and hold up a sign. Again, as I said before, holding up a sign is completely legal. Malate, the man who trains the downtown hosts, is apparently not read the law, doesn't understand the law, or is intentionally misrepresenting the law. And I wrote in this letter to the Citizens Police Review Board that I thought he was misrepresenting the law. Now, it really doesn't matter, by the way, that I wrote to the CPRB on this, because Malate is what they call a CSO, a community service officer. He wears light blue as distinguished from dark blue you'll see downtown. If you notice the different costumes worn by police officers, you got the green hosts, you got the brown security guards, you got the dark blue police officers, you got the light blue community service officers. Now, community service officers are a part of the police department, but they're not subject to the, quote, review of the Citizens Police Review Board. Not that it matters, because the Citizens Police Review Board doesn't review anything. I mean, it routinely gives a rubber stamp to everything the police do, never holds public hearings, never has an independent investigation, couldn't care less when people are shot, and doesn't even, you know, bother to hold early investigations in order to give the public some understanding of what's going on, doesn't review firearms policies, doesn't care that people are pepper sprayed. It's a pretty bad board, and hopefully will resign en masse or be executed en masse in terms of at least the city council firing it. At least four city council members should fire their current proxies on that Citizens Police Review Board. But the CSOs are not actually under the Citizens Police Review Board. Not that any of the police officers are either, as I said, but the CSOs are specifically excluded. But they can run around and write these little nasty citations that frighten older or disabled people, that intimidate young people, that harass and make miserable other people, and are all done, mind you, for the good of the downtown to make this a more hospitable and humane environment for the shoppers. I don't think too much needs to be said about that, except that that's another damn good reason for coming down tomorrow at 1 o'clock, doing some tabling with me and Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and coming down at 5:30 and continuing that tabling in front of New Leaf Market, or if it's raining, in front of Blockbuster Video. Because we need this city to turn around and to realize that it's time to stop repressing the poor, it's time to stop harassing the homeless, it's time to start giving everyone the full benefit of human rights. And it can't just be a handful of us doing it. It has to be the community of those whose rights are being violated have to stand up and support their own rights. And, of course, often that's the hardest to do. It took many, many, many aborted protests, small individual protest martyrs, in the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s, before suddenly the spark happened and everybody refused to use the Birmingham buses and did the successful Birmingham bus boycott, until hundreds and hundreds of civil workers went south and began to support voter registration in the 60s and similar campaigns, sit-ins in Greensboro and other places. Civil rights is something that, you know, you can't be sure when the spark is going to be lit, but you got to keep trying to strike the match. That's what you got to keep trying to do. And that's what we're doing here at Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. That's what we're doing here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. And that's what hopefully you will join us in doing if you give us a call at 427-4523. Now, the flasher light on this phone has gotten a little dim. So if you have called in the last half hour and for some reason I've ignored you, try again. Give me a break. Let us hear from you. And let's see if we can get you on the air if you have something to say about anything you've heard. And again, if you want to talk to city council members, that is happening now. And that is happening... boy, did I lose my... Ooh, my producer is going to kill me. Wait a minute, I hear a voice. 425-4920 is apparently the voice from the wilderness. It just shouted at me. That's the number you should call if you want to reach Voices from the Village. That's the television show that often is pretty namby-pamby, but sometimes holds people's noses to the grindstone on issues. That's a community television show that has, right now, three council members: Crone, Fitzmorris, and Sugar. 425-4920. Give a call, even if you haven't got a television, and ask some questions of these city council members, the new city council majority. We need them to get off their happy butts, off their smiley face. You know, enough of the smiley talk, and let's get down to some real changes in oppressive laws, specifically and most important, beginning with the sleeping ban. The sleeping ban needs to be changed, and changed on December 8th, and then with a special session called on the 15th. And if that upsets the merchants, well, so be it. It's not like we're stealing their beds. I mean, let's look at it that way, shall we? And again, I don't think this is going to happen magically. You can call city council, and that's a good idea, at 429-3550, then press the pound key and tell them, please get off the stick, accept nothing less than changing the sleeping ban on the 8th. I know you don't want to do it. I know you're nervous about it. I know you'd rather wait. I know you'd rather have every merchant agreeing. I know you'd rather have all kinds of sessions and have it done in February. But that means pain and suffering and possibly death for homeless people outside, and it certainly means constant fear and indignity for hundreds and hundreds of people. And you can't wait for that. I guess the other option is to direct the city attorney to go into court and find the law unconstitutional. That might be a positive thing. I don't know if a city can do that on itself. I doubt it. But that's another option. You know, I had a lot more I was going to be doing tonight, and I'm going to start trying to do that. Santa Barbara
is a city that has a sleeping ban. It has a more complicated history because they actually abolished their sleeping ban back in 1986 when they were faced with the threat of mass protests from the Creative Community for Nonviolence, led by Mitch Snyder and lots of local homeless activists. They had a campaign, Come to the Fig Tree, Go to Sleep, Go to Jail, that was to start, I believe, on September 1st in 1986. And the city council capitulated and ended their sleeping ban. And for 3 years, there was no sleeping ban in Santa Barbara. And by the way, Councilmember Rotkin, they did not have hundreds and thousands and millions of homeless people coming to town. And the sad reality is Rotkin knows that because he was on the city council when John Laird called the mayor of Santa Barbara and had conference calls about that issue. Unless, of course, the mayor lied to them. I suppose that's possible. Mayor Sheila Lodge has never been the best and the most honest of people. She was the mayor at that time, and she was the mayor in 92 when I was in Santa Barbara. Anyway, Santa Barbara recently, as I mentioned, because it has this process for citizens putting matters on the council agenda, had a sleeping ban issue raised by members of the public. I'm going to play you some of the debate and the discussion around that right now.
Ask that you leave the chamber as quietly as possible.
Madam Mayor.
Yes.
At this point, I have more than 15. I have about 18 requests to speak. I'd suggest you not accept any more requests on item 30.
I won't accept any more.
Request from Robert H. Boone for the revocation of City of Santa Barbara anti-sleeping ordinances. Staff recommendation that Council A. Hear a request from Mr. Robert H. Boone to revoke Santa Barbara Municipal Code Sections 1516070, unlawful areas to camp, 1516080, recreational vehicles, unlawful areas to use, and 1516085, unlawful areas to sleep. And B, deny Mr. Boone's request based on staff's recommendation to retain the ordinances.
Mrs. Tripp-Jones, do you wish to have Mr. Boone speak first, or do you wish to have staff comments?
Yes, I think we should hear first from Mr. Boone, okay. And then Captain Glaus will present the staff report.
Okay, Mr. Boone?
Mayor and Council, thank you for allowing me to be here. My friends call me Bear. I invite you all to do the same. I'm hoping for a peaceful resolution. It's a win-win for everybody out of this question that I've raised for tonight. And I hope that we can all treat this as a sacred space and an opportunity for some healing here. It feels like a lucid dream, and I'm tampering with an illusion right now. This is a very different world than I'm accustomed to right now. I spent 20 years in the corporate world. I was an executive doing computer systems for hospitals. So I'm in touch with kind of this, maybe some of the space that you're in and some of the fears around the issues here. I hope we all use this forum properly today. I come in respect. Forgive me for not having a suit anymore. I hope that everybody who's going to speak stays very relevant to the subject, and I hope that all of us can be very honest tonight to facilitate some healing. If we revoke these anti-sleeping ordinances, there's going to be issues that are raised that are going to be coming up. You know, there's going to be fears about people sleeping on State Street. There's going to be fears on the part of the homeless. Does this mean we can sleep in a park? Which ones? There's going to be concerns about what's it going to look like in the morning when I go to work and I've got to drive past that park. And I hope that we can work together. I offer myself to work together to resolve the issues that would come from revoking these laws. Solutions may be like turning the sprinklers on at 7 o'clock in the morning to get them out of the park instead of in the middle of the night so they can't use the park. And I propose that's a subsequent agenda item to deal with these things. So I would like it very much if we can stay focused on should sleeping be illegal. Even beyond the Constitution, we have certain inalienable rights. As human beings, we have a right to be. And being involves moving, traveling. It involves rest, eat, and defecate. The city has made it very, very difficult for homeless persons to rest. It's also very difficult to take a dump at night sometimes. It's hard to find a place that the homeless person can go to. And then there is the issue of the constitutionality of this. There was recently a decision in Miami, in a U.S. District Court, after a 10-year battle ACLU had with Miami over sleeping tickets. And the decision there was you can't give the guy a ticket unless you've offered him an alternative place to stay, and he's refused. But I ask you to consider the harmlessness of sleep. What is the offense? Where's the victim? It carries a misdemeanor fine, I believe, I'm told, a $75 fine with a $125 victim fee. It's a $125 victim fee because it's a misdemeanor. But the city doesn't have to produce the victim. Fact is, the victim is the guy that woke up and got a ticket. There's concern about related offenses associated with homeless and sleeping. Issues such as littering, trespassing, disorderly conduct, illegal fires, etc. We have laws for these issues, and those are the ones to enforce, not sleeping. These fears are not a reason to make sleeping illegal. I ask you to consider the vulnerability of the sleeper. I know that's one concern. And that was a reason that was suggested for having it illegal to sleep outside. But the homeless people are asking, please, take your laws off our bodies. It's dangerous to drive an automobile. It's dangerous to skydive. We don't make these things illegal. There's safety in numbers in the park. These laws cause people, consider the homeless woman who just maybe left after a beating from her husband and she got sick and she goes running out of the house with a pillow and a blanket at 10 o'clock at night. She wants to sleep in the park in the light. Wouldn't it be nice if there were other people around there too to create a little bit more security than having to hide in the bushes so she doesn't get a ticket? Consider the effects of these laws, hiding in unlit places to sleep. Poor sleep for fear of the law. Consider this image. An alcoholic homeless person has been drinking in the evening and he crashes in a park under a tree. Several hours later, an officer comes along and wakes him up. Full of anger, probably, a little hostility there, maybe. And he gives him a ticket and tells him, you can't sleep here. You can't stay here. You got to go somewhere else. So now, what we have is an awake, drunk, half hungover, no money in his pocket, wandering around, can't think of anything but finding another drink. Who is more apt to commit the crime? The officer, the drunk that just was awakened by the policeman and given a ticket, or the one that was left there peacefully sleeping? It feels to most of us homeless like harassment. It promotes anger toward the police and the system. It increases the feelings of isolation from society. I think something that upsets all of us that we see from time to time is a homeless person walking down the street raging. You've seen him before. God damn this and F this. And we've all seen that person. It makes us all cringe. He's yelling obscenities. Do you think that the effects of these laws might contribute to his behavior? That the hate and the disdain that he feels might contribute? 30-40% of the homeless are emotionally and or mentally unstable. They need love. They don't need disdain. Why do these laws exist? From the view of the homeless, some consider that it's about money. Most people in Santa Barbara pay a property tax or a rental tax or a hotel tax, or they pay... what can we do about the homeless? They can pay a fine. It feels to many like a hate crime against the homeless, these laws. It feels like a tool for the purpose of harassment. There's a couple of hundred offenses nightly. I'm sure there's at least 100 people a night in Santa Barbara that are sleeping in their cars, and there's another 100 that are sleeping around in bushes and at the beach and places. It feels to us like random or selective enforcement. You don't really know when he's going to come wake you. And that promotes fear. There was an experiment with mice done where they took some mice and they
shocked them. And they just shocked them at random intervals. And they had some other mice that there was a light bulb that came on first, and then they got the shock. Every time they got the warning of the light first. The ones with the light, they got accustomed to it because they knew it was coming. They could prepare for it. The ones that got it randomly just went nuts. They were fighting and attacking each other. They were totally stressed out. They got diseases. There's been experiments with sleep deprivation, too, and what that does. Similar results. It creates stress. I was talking earlier to a psychologist who is actually with your Department of Social Services, and he talked about some of the effects of stress, not just on the physical body, but on the demeanor of the person. I think you already know what these symptoms are. So, think about the homeless person angrily yelling obscenities down the street. Maybe there's some things that our system is doing to provoke that. I also consider the view of the city. It's a beautiful city, and tourism is very important to the city. And again, I offer myself to help resolve any issues that come up as a result of revoking these laws. I feel like I've got some responsibility. But I'm asking for some compassion. Compassion for the battered housewife. Compassion for all the homeless that don't fit your fearful stereotype. There's many of us. How many people in Santa Barbara are one paycheck away from being homeless? What about the Vietnam vet? What about the religious or spiritual person that's just seeking non-attachment? Just wanting to sleep under the stars. There's a lot of people just want to sleep under the stars. Will you allow this? Kids who grew up unloved, molested, or other abuses, the street's full of them, and a lot of emotionally unstable. I'm asking you for compassion for these people. They don't all fit your stereotype. Let us please begin the healing process by restoring the right to sleep. We all make mistakes. It was a mistake to make these laws in an attempt to solve the homeless problem. The problem is in the polarities. It's in the separation. The separation comes from judgment. Let's open our hearts. I forgive you for having so much more material wealth than I do. Will you forgive me for my freedom?